We all know the classic pyramid structures of Giza. The man-made structure made out of blocks of stone, some weighing 3 to 4 tons. Some of the interior stones weighing up to 50 tons or more. That's a classic pyramid. Those are the ones we know about. The Bosnian pyramids are different. The Bosnian pyramids are man-made from free-formed mountains. And that means that some ancient culture over 30,000 years ago formed and reshaped these mountains into pyramids. Today, we're going to hear from a reporter, a writer, a videographer who has front row seats to this exploration, is going to tell us exactly how these were formed, how these pyramids were put together, and of great interest to me, the cements, the different kinds of cements that were used in building these standing pyramids. Bosnia is our focus today, the unusual pyramids of that part of the world. Later, we're going to hear from Melissa Tittle on just what Gaia has been reporting on the Bosnian pyramids. And our own Adam Young brings us the topics for this week. Three items, three pieces of streaming media that you can look at in the comfort of your home. All this from the world of Earth Ancients. For Saturday, December 15th, 2018, this is Earth Ancients. I'm your host, Cliff Dunning. Hey, how are you? This is Cliff, your host. Welcome to, it's time. It's time for Earth Ancients. Hope you're doing well during this holiday season. You know, it's hard to get work done when your mind's on relaxation and the holiday spirit. So, but we got to continue on. We got to do our thing. We have to contribute to society in whatever way we do it. And the show must go on. And I love doing the show. And although it's a lot of work and we have people that come in and help out, we continue doing it. I wanted to mention that we are moving. We moved the network recently from Blog Talk Radio over to Sprecher, the Sprecher network. We've been with, had been with Blog Talk for over 4 years, and they were purchased, and actually they're moving everybody over to Sprecher, which is a good thing because Sprecher has a lot of really great connections with iHeartRadio. Also a number of smaller distribution points that really help us get the word out to people around the world. So, but I do want to make the announcement simply because some people may have feed problems. You may have problems with your access point. If all of a sudden you're not getting Earth Ancients, go to Stitcher or go to one of the different, check another distributor out, another way to get the material. Either go to Stitcher or Overcast or go to TuneIn. If you're really having problems, you can go to iTunes and it'll be there. But I've been told by my engineer and by the people at Sprecher that there shouldn't be any delays, any problems with getting the feed. So it's helping us out because it's growing the program. It gives us more access to new people. But if you have any problems at all, send me an email. Send it to cliff at earthancients.com and say, hey, man, I can't get it anymore. I don't know what's going on. I've been told that the RSS feed, which is the signal that goes through the internet, is not going to be disturbed to the point where it's going to distract or not continue going to the same location. So if you have any problems at all, check those out. Check out Stitcher. If you don't want to go to any other site and you're not getting it on your site, it may take up to 24 hours additional for the feed to go through. It's been going through now the last couple of weeks. But again, if you have any problems, let me know and I will see what I can do on my end. I want to mention that I took hundreds of photographs from our recent Yucatan, Mexico tour. There are photos of artifacts, buildings, and just the overall uniqueness of the Mayan culture, the ancient Mayan culture. And over the next many months, I will post articles, short articles with the photo galleries on some of the things that I found kind of unique about the Yucatan Peninsula, as well as articles. And I'll be co-writing with a couple other people that were on the tour. You heard from Helen Ground recently talking about her discovery of an unusual stone stele, a standing marker that she found in Zapil Shatun, which is in northern Yucatan. But we have other people that are professionals who did the tour who are also contributing to articles and galleries. So to get this information, you got to go to facebook.com, go to the group page, Earth Ancients, or go to the international page. And if you're not into the social media, they will show up on earthancients.com under the Facebook feed. So go to the Facebook feed to see all this. And there is some fascinating things that people have uncovered. I've had my eyes opened by some of the things that I've been told and have been shown on these tours and on this recent tour specifically. So it's always fun to hear from others who see anomalous things in artifacts, in the buildings and in the structures that we go and visit. And some of the things that we experience are not visual. They're actually sensory. And we did have some sensitives with us on this tour who made some interesting comments of what they were experiencing. And last week we had Sonia Grace talk about her impressions. We are going to have a world-class sensitive who's also a dowser on the program in the coming weeks, hopefully before the end of the month. And she specializes in places like Stonehenge and has written extensively about Stonehenge. And we're talking about Maria Wheatley, who's a foremost authority on this subject. So, and she comes from a line of dowsers, a family of dowsers. She's part of a professional group of dowsers in England. So that will be interesting for me because, as I've mentioned before, there's no way, we don't have the technology now to describe, disseminate, to give us details about what is coming out of these ley lines. What does this telluric energy mean? What does it mean for the body? How does it affect the body? And more importantly, how does it affect the environment? If these emissions are pulsing out of these pyramids, what's it doing to the air? What's it doing to the local environment? Is it helpful? Is it negative? I mean, what is happening? So we'll hear from people who are sensitives, which represents our only way to understand how these emissions affect us and our environment. So stay tuned for that. That's coming up. It's coming up in the next couple of weeks. So I'm really looking forward to that. I want to mention our first tour of 2019 is coming up. Spirit Journey into the Orion Zone is May 17th through the 20th. And this is something I've been wanting to do for a number of years. We're going to be touring Albuquerque, New Mexico. That's our center point. That's where we all meet. And we will visit Chaco Canyon, the Salmon Ruins, the Aztec Ruins. We'll go to the Mesa Verde, but more importantly, we're not going with just any old tour guide. We're going to be exploring these places with natives, Native Americans who've lived in those areas for thousands and thousands of years. Before we venture into any one of these places, there will be a ceremony to bless us, to also open these places energetically. So as we enter say, Chaco Canyon, the ruins there, we will have access to the energies that were designed into those buildings. And that'll happen at each location we go to. This, again, is May 17th through the 20th. And I've just been granted a special discount. If you can join us, if you can get your deposit in by the 18th of December, you'll get $100 off the entrance fee. And you can see the entire itinerary by going to earthancients.com/tours. And it gives you a day-to-day itinerary. It also explains what we'll be doing. But not only just that, it'll detail who is our guide. And these are Native Hopi, Zuni elders, who will be with us each day of this tour, which really makes it outstanding. I don't know of any tour that has that quantity, and I should also say quality of guide, to take us into these sacred places that, look, we're going in blind. And to have somebody with you who can describe why the places were built and what the sensations you're feeling are all about, that's really exceptional, and that's really fantastic. So again, Spirit Journey into the Orion Zone, May 17th through the 20th. Get your deposit in, go to earthancients.com/tours, and you'll be able to experience really an outstanding tour. That's the first tour we're coming up with in 2019. Today we're going to head to Bosnia, and we're going to take a deep look at the pyramids there that were discovered in 2005 by Dr. Sam Osmanović. We've had Dr. Osmanović on the show a number of times, describing his perceptions, his belief, and discovery of these unusual structures. Today's guest is Jock Doubleday, who was the official videographer for a number of the discoveries. He's written extensively about this cluster of man-made pyramids, and we're going to hear in detail some of the analysis that has not been reported to the general public, including one of my fascinations, which is are the cements, the man-made cements that have been analyzed and to have been discovered to be in advance of what we have today, powerful glues, powerful cements that are made using available minerals, but enhanced to a level of strength that is beyond our comprehension. So that's our program today. I think you're really going to be fascinated in it. Earth Ancients is sponsored by the subscribers of Patreon. And when you become a subscriber, you support the work we do here on Earth Ancients. For as little as $5 a month, you support each week's programs, the guests and the research that we do for each show. But as a subscriber, you also get a ton of free stuff. We got all kinds of ebooks that you can download. We have galleries. We have interviews that are not published. And we also have Cliff Notes, which is a chance each month to check in with me and a special guest on just what's on your mind, what's happening with Earth Ancients. So consider a subscription. For more information, go to Patreon, patreon.com/Earth Ancients, and you can register there and you can read all about it. I want to thank the following people for becoming subscribers in the last 30 days. Thank you to Ken Lee, Curtis Campbell, Jose Brissino, Bill Kostad, Mark Slater, and Robin Larizari. I probably butchered your name. I apologize for that. Hey, but thanks, guys. You rock. You make it happen. And that's what it's all about. And I really, really appreciate your support. Okay, here's today's show. I hope you enjoy it. We'll be right back. Time to check in with Melissa Tittle. Melissa's in Denver. She is the content director for Gaia. And this week we are focusing on the Bosnian pyramids and their dynamic quality, what makes them so unique. And I thought I'd ask Melissa what her feelings were, what her opinion is, since she does cover a lot of these anomalous topics. So, Melissa, how you doing there? How are
you? Good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. So, what do you think of the Bosnian pyramids? We are focusing on the cements, the emissions, the vibratory emissions that are coming out of the pyramid, and these unusual labyrinth of tunnels that they've recently, I shouldn't say recently, they've known about them, but they're digging into the nearby labyrinth, and apparently there's three different levels, which is kind of nuts. So what do you think?
Yeah. Well, for me, the Bosnian pyramid is, it makes sense. I mean, I've heard that it's actually older than the Great Pyramid.
Yeah, 30,000 years. Can you believe it? That's what they dated it. Yeah.
Right. And that would be an amazing discovery if that was proven. It's still, to me, it needs more evidence and research. But that's just me personally. I think it's really fascinating. I think that 100% some they could have built it before the Great Pyramids. I mean, we find anomalies all the time. But there's just some things that... I mean, it might have been a very sacred hill, so they would have built things on top of it. They would have carved out tunnels. It might have a certain mineral makeup that the ancient people would have thought, oh, wow, it has some kind of magnetizing power here, and we can hold ceremonies. Mm-hmm. That might make sense. I mean, maybe
do you think,
just naturally.
Do you think the problem that you have is because it's not a pyramid in the classical sense of stone blocks pointing, you know, in a pyramidal shape, or that it doesn't work for you in terms of the term pyramid, and maybe it's more like you're saying a sacred site.
Yeah, I mean, I know that I understand that the classical form, meaning like what we know and what we've seen in Egypt.
Yeah,
it just seems that maybe it was already formed, but it had some kind of property that the ancient people were drawn to, and they thought, and they used it to magnetize some kind of power. I mean, that's totally possible. I mean, I know it looks like a pyramid, and there's grass growing and all over it and stuff. There's pyramids in the jungle where there's lots of vegetation growing, and they still look like structures of pyramids, right?
Yeah.
And they're still, I mean, they're still, they got overgrown vines and all of them. And then they discover and they're like, oh my God, it's an ancient city, but it still exists as a structure. And that's why it's hard for me. I'm not saying it's not, I'm just saying that, I find it really interesting. And I think that it would be quite an awesome find if they were to prove it.
Yeah. Have you done any programming where you, have people that are testing telluric fields or natural ley lines? Because the theory goes that this thing sits on top of a massive ley line that crisscrosses, and then it pushes up a ton of energy up through the body of the pyramid. So what have you discovered? What kind of ley lines have you filmed or researched?
Well, we worked with Maria Wheatley when I did a Stonehenge episode.
I love her. We're going to have her on the show later this
week. Oh, good. She's awesome. I love her. And I love her work. I don't know if she's been out there. I'm assuming she's if she hasn't gone already, she probably will be diving into that.
Gonna have
with
to
her
ask
talent.
Her. Yeah,
for sure. And I completely 100% believe in all of that. And it's interesting that ancient people were able to kind of figure out where the lines were, where the power was coming from, and and either build a structure or, you know, possibly in this case, find one that's on it and then excavate it and make it into a temple. That doesn't mean that it's, you know, maybe underneath it all it is a massive pyramid they built. But the fact that ancient people were, you know, this is something that we don't even think of in modern day. We're not like, I'm going to build my house on a power source. You know, we're just like, we're going to build a house, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
But this was something that's that they seem to be able to tap into. It'd be interesting to do the telluric ley lines, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
In the great cities of the United States to see if some of that construction actually too was pre-planned.
That's like, a great idea. I don't think John Burke did any of that. He went out to sacred sites. He's the most well-known scientist / entrepreneur who had really high-end equipment to scan various sacred sites, including a lot of Mayan areas, a lot of Mayan cities, and found these telluric fields. So going to like Washington, D.C. with the Washington Monument to see if it's underneath a telluric field.
Yeah.
The
reason I brought that up is as I was saying that, you know, ancient people, as I was saying, seem to have this connection. But maybe there is people, maybe the Masons, the Freemasons or, I don't want to say Illuminati because it always sounds so negative. But, maybe there is groups of people that understand this ley line and this power. And maybe that is part of our pre-planning of cities, monuments.
Yeah, that's so funny you mentioned that because there's a lot of people that have written about the Washington area being laid out with sacred geometry, And so that would make sense if it was, under a ley line or under a sacred area. So, okay, well, thank you for that heads up. What are you doing for the holidays? Are you shopping right now for everybody and preparing for the doors to be closed at Gaia for holiday time? Or are you working right through the holidays?
Well, the evolution of humanity cannot stop with the holiday. However, yes, I'll start my Christmas shopping this weekend. Yeah, I'm pretty late to the game. And then Christmas, I'm staying here. And then I'm going to go to Miami with my fiance.
Oh, okay. So you're staying local, going skiing, snowboarding.
And then going to the beach at 83 weather.
Oh, yeah. I guess it gets old after a while. Of course, you're an L.A. gal, so you're used to more temperate environments, right?
Right. Not too hot, not too cold. Just enough to complain that somehow the universe isn't good enough.
Okay. Hey, sounds good. Thanks for the heads up on your ideas about the Bosnian pyramids, and we'll talk to you next time.
All right. Thank you.
Of all the boys I've known, and I've known some.
One small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Coming to you live from around the world, it's Earth Ancient News.
So it's time to check in with Adam Young. Adam is the keeper of knowledge each week. As you know, he is out looking for current articles related to ancient Earth. A lot of the things that have happened in the past, either through discovery, scientific investigation, or they're just good articles, which is great. Hey, Adam, how you doing, man?
Hey, Cliff, how are you?
Good morning. Good. All right, we got the three articles that you've put together. These are bits and pieces of information. Let's look at the first one. The title is Riddle of the Red Deer. Orkney deer arrived by Neolithic ship study reveals. What's that all about?
Yeah, this is something that Laird had posted on his Facebook page. And Laird, for people that don't know him well, he started off analyzing the Dogon tribe, which is a very ancient culture located in Mali that seemed to have brought some remnants of a pre-dynastic or very early Egyptian culture. They use hieroglyphics. They have the same cosmology, and they still speak in ancient Egyptian. And he's linked that culture to a few other places around the world. So it's not clear what came first, in terms of the order. But the Orkney Islands is one focus of Laird's that seems to have some sort of a connection to this Egyptian Dogon, very early culture.
Right.
So this article's from 2016. Laird has been talking about it recently again because it really supports some of his views, which I believe came first before, some of these articles and some of the more modern mainstream archaeologists and historians have come around, which is that this culture is linked to this North African civilization. Mm-hmm. So Laird's position is that these Dogon people, and it looks like from analyzing some of the ancient structures and stuff sort of below ground on Orkney, that there's cosmology that's the same. Some of the science, the home building, the way the houses were constructed to represent some sort of like cosmology idea of how the universe formed. And then the belief systems, the fact that men were circumcised, there's all sorts of statistical correlations that when you add them up, it does become a bit overwhelming. Mm-hmm. Anyway, this article is basically talking about deer. So there's these special type of red deer that are not found in Northern Europe or any other area. So the question is how they get there. You know, if they didn't come from mainland Scotland or the UK or even Northern Europe, the only place these deer were really ever found, or at least they think were found, the closest was in very southern Europe, like the Iberian Peninsula, you know, south of Spain. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, pretty close to Africa. So this is another connection that Laird sort of picked up on. And it shows that if they were brought there, they were brought there by a culture that had advanced maritime technology. So yeah. boats that traveled across the ocean, or at least long distances. Right.
That's pretty cool. So he does correlate the two, that the deer was brought up to these islands.
Right. I'm not convinced. I don't think it's convincing enough to say that, you know, the Orkney culture were intricately related to the Dogon culture or anything like that. I think he's trying to show that there's common underpinnings, like maybe they both came from something even earlier. And like an earlier culture branched out and landed in different places, but they weren't as primitive as, you know, we've led to believe. If you look at the historians and the traditional mainstream view of, you know, not just Egypt, but also like South America, is that these people never had boats. They didn't travel across the ocean. They were, right. You know, they walked, they were primitive. But I think there's a lot of evidence to suggest that that's absolutely ridiculous and not true. Okay. And I think this is another case to be made.
Yeah. I've had Laird on a couple of times, and he's always very thorough in his writing. So that's a good one. Thanks for that. Okay. The next article is elephant sized mammal lived alongside the dinosaur. That's an interesting topic.
I know. I love these. It doesn't mean that humans were walking alongside the dinosaur. It's a little bit misleading. It just means that there was large mammal like species that are now extinct. They were kind of a cross between reptiles and mammals, but they almost look like giant sort of pig, hippopotamus, rhino sort of conglomerations, plant eaters, of course. They had sort of beaks, almost like how like a platypus is kind of an amalgamation of a mammal and a reptile and a bird. There a lot of animals were like that in the distant past, and one of them is oddly very similar to what a giant mammal would have looked like, and it lived alongside huge dinosaurs at the beginning of the Triassic period. So this thing was like 15 feet long, 8 or 9 feet tall, weighed like 8, 9, 10 tons. Mm-hmm. So this is millions of years before what was previously regarded as the introduction of early mammals. So again, it's a timeline being, I think, pushed back by millions of years, not thousands of millions. Okay. So it's another good data point.
Well, you know, Michael Cremo has a number of examples of humans living along dinosaurs, so nothing is – I don't think it's too far-fetched.
Well, you're talking about the Triassic, you know, and some of these periods are 300 million years ago, 250, 300. Mm-hmm. That's pretty old. I think that's different than saying, humans have been around for 1 or 2 million years.
Yeah.
No, that would change things by quite a bit, but 300 is – you know, that's orders of magnitude, and
humans go back that far, but
right.
when Cremo comes on the show, he's always, I think, 10 million or maybe more. I could be wrong. That's interesting.
That's still different than 300, though. So,
yeah, 300 million is huge. It's a very big deal. Okay, the last article is one that's always interesting to me. 50,000-year-old tiara made of woolly mammoth ivory found in the world-famous Denifisin Cave. Now, this is new, isn't it? This is another – they must have gotten in there and dug down a little deeper and found this tiara.
Right. This is from last week from what came out in Siberian Times in December 6th. So Siberia is one area that stands to benefit from, a rewriting or a redating of some of the history that, you know, was previously regarded in that area. I think – there's been a couple of Denisovan findings there. So there was this one cave in particular where a whole bunch of families were found and lots of artifacts like beads and ornaments and rings and bracelets and arrowheads and et cetera. This is coming from one of the caves that was already known. So they, I think you're right, they were probably excavating further. They found a tiara made out of mammoth ivory, which they can date the ivory because it's carbon-based, to, they said, at least 50,000 years ago. So that corresponds with when I think people regard the Denisovans to have flourished in that region, yeah, or maybe towards the end of their life cycle anyway. But it's interesting because one of the points in the article is that this is obviously for a male because it's larger. And, you know, we don't know how big Denisovans really were. We don't really have too many full skeletons. So for someone to say that is like, that goes against logic and common sense. You don't know how big these people were. So how can you say that the males were larger than the female? Like, you don't know that. These could have been quote unquote giants in that they were 7 feet tall on average. Maybe the average height of a Denisovan was 7.5 feet tall. We don't know
yeah,
that.
Yeah. Well, Andrew Collins wants us to believe they're all giants. So how can you tell that from the pinky of a bone hand bone?
Of course. It's a relative term too.
Maybe yeah. Who knows? Maybe the jewelry is massive because there's been some jewelry pieces that have been found. So
they also have the jewelry in and of itself is interesting because you could say that even a primitive or an advanced ape perhaps might wear something on their head because it's different or it's pretty.
Yeah.
But these beads and some of the rings, this tiara as well, they have holes that are sort of burrowed into them or dug into them, which indicates they have some sort of drilling technology, whether it's primitive or advanced. I don't know. I haven't seen it, but they still have a drill, which means they have the wheel again.
Yeah. I know, and this tiara and these other jewelry pieces all have have holes in them, so they were drilled in some way, which makes you
right.
Wonder. These Denisovans are kind of strange, very advanced, but who knows how advanced.
There has to be more caves in yeah. Siberia. I mean, look at the size of that area of the country
yeah.
in North Russia. It's like the largest sparsely inhabited place on Earth. There's got to be. Just this has got to be the tip of the iceberg in terms of finds up there.
Well, they got to just keep digging
yeah.
and see what else they find. All right, hey, as usual, these are three goodies, Adam. Thank you for those. You can see them on the Facebook page under the banner this week, and the banner features writer videographer Jock Doubleday. Look for his photograph. Adam's list of this week's topics will be underneath. Check them out in the comfort of your computer. All right, Adam, thanks for that, and we will talk to you next week.
Okay, thank you, Cliff.
We're covering the Bosnian pyramids. I have been fascinated by these structures for as long as they have been reported. They were discovered by Dr. Sam Osmanovic late 2005. Most of the data we have report that they were found in 2006, but the more I find, the more I read about Dr. Sam's discovery, it was 2005. And these are very anomalous structures. They are formed on natural mountains and then artificially reformed with a number of materials, most notably cements. The scientific community has been divided to their legitimacy. In other words, there's some groups that believe they are not man-made, people like Robert Schock, Zahi Hawass, and others. But as more and more scientists have intervened, a multidisciplinary group of scientists made up of people that are engineers, who are involved in physics and energetics and emissions have recorded and now claim that it's not a natural formation, that there is a science involved that we just don't understand. And a number of physicists have now reported that, as well as geologists reported that the mountain has been modified, the pyramid of the sun, pyramid of the moon, and the other pyramids all have the look of artificiality that man or human beings or beings have modified. And today I am really happy to have a writer, videographer, who has made a significant amount of research and documented it, and you can see these documents on YouTube. His name is Jock Doubleday. He is a writer, videographer, and for 16 months, from 2014 to 2015, and some additional time in 2017, he was the official videographer for the archaeological park in Bosnia, known as the Bosnian Pyramid of the Sun Foundation, which is a nonprofit. And little did I know that Dr. Sam Osmanovic asked him to document what was being uncovered and what was being introduced to the community, not only in video, but also Jock has done an extensive amount of writing, and it's excellent. Hey, Jock, welcome to the program. Just great to have you on the show today.
Cliff, I'm really excited to be here and to share anything that I can with you and your listeners.
Wow. Hey, talk a little bit about the 16 months that you spent in Bosnia. Now, was this something that you had planned on, or did you and Dr. Sam kind of get together and he said, look, we want to look into this a little deeper. Can you help?
Well, I had gone out in 2011 to volunteer for 3 months. And while I was there, I helped at the scientific conference. I helped organize it there, the one that was in Visoko in that summer of 2011. And while I was doing that, I was on the side kind of making these little videos with tourists and volunteers and scientists and employees of the Archaeological Park Foundation. And I would just post them almost daily on YouTube. So Semir liked these videos, and then we kept in touch for the next few years. And in 2014, he said, why don't you come back with a professional camera? Because the little camera I had before was kind of an amateur thing. And yeah. I guess so I got a professional camera. He said, I want you to make some short scientific videos. We need 2.5 minute long videos, no longer, because we don't want to push the envelope of people's attention span on the Bosnian pyramids. We just want to get the science out on different aspects of the project. The megaliths in Rovne Tunnel, which are now called ceramic sculptures instead of megaliths. Water in Rovne Tunnel, the healing properties of Rovne Tunnel, the concrete on the Pyramid of the Sun, and I know that's an interest of yours. So we just made those videos, and then I just kept making longer videos. And I said, hey, do you want me to stay the winter? He said, sure, write an article for Wikipedia. So I spent 3 months writing an article for Wikipedia. They declined it in 10 minutes. Yeah, so that we can't get anything on Wikipedia.
Yeah, they're pretty legit. They think they're the bottom line, and they're not. They're just I can't stand Wikipedia. Talk a little bit about your time in Bosnia. What was it like living there for 16 months? What is the culture like in terms of a society? I mean, was it depressed? Was it easy to live there? What's the lifestyle like?
Well, I would say that my energy, my sort of upbeat California American energy, was an aberration in that little village, because those people they're on a different clock. They're running slow. They're just taking their time. And I was like, hey, we got to get this information out about these pyramids. And they're like, what pyramids? And I said, you know, those pyramids you're living on right there. And they just didn't. There was no sense. most of the people there just didn't really care about this issue. It's not like they're saying, no, there are no pyramids. They just didn't care. They're like, I'm going to go back to smoking my cigarette now. So, you know, that was sort of the attitude. Some of the Bosnians did jump on board, and some of them are religious volunteers. I mean, they yeah. come every single shift, you know?
Yeah.
So, but most of the Bosnians, I feel like there's a PTSD after the war. They're really under a lot of pressure from that war. It just destroyed a lot of their economy and a lot of their structures. There's still bullet holes in the building. I mean, it's an amazing little village, really.
So you, how did you get around? Did you rent a car, or did people take you up to the mountain, and then you stayed in the local town and had your little research area where you were able to edit your videos and such?
Well, I walked, and that was the key to making these videos, because I would notice that the road excavations were cutting into all the hills and the pyramids, you know, so that it would show the layering of the claystone and the clay. So there'd be the soft earthquake mitigating clay alongside the road, and then you'd have the claystone layer that was inclined into the structure wherever you were. It didn't matter, you know. So I would just see this as I walked around. So I was walking from the hotel to the sites, you know, to the Rodney Tunnel entrance or to the Pyramid of the Sun.
Interesting. Now, what is the official feeling from the local government? Did they recognize this as a pyramid, or is it one of these anomalous things that Dr. Sam has promoted to the point where it is more of an attraction?
Well, in the beginning, it's an interesting question, because in the beginning, the drama is that they started out supporting the project, the city of Visoko and the state of Bosnia. So and they were giving money toward this project and helping him. And then a mayor came in to Visoko who was against the project, and we couldn't really figure out why she was against it, but she was in there for several years. And then we thought, well, we're going to have to wait for a new mayor. But in fact, she changed her mind. So last year, she jumped on board the project and has fully embraced the project. She sees how many tourists that Samir's project brings in.
Okay, so the pyramid complex is bringing in tourists, which means that's going to help with the economy. Maybe they can add some more hotels and make the roads better and so on and so forth. Are you seeing any improvements? Have you seen it when you were there in 2017? Was there any improvements that have been added since the previous time you were there?
Another great question, because really recently they did just put a new road in for the Rovne Tunnel tourism situation there, because Rovne was the problem as far as trying to get there, because the road was just this crummy little asphalt road that's barely hanging on to the edge of the hill. And so they made a new road. It's really strong. It's well supported. And that was in the winter, this last winter. So I was in 2017, and then it wasn't there yet. So just this last winter, it went in. It's really fantastic.
Well, that's good news. That means that the revenue that's brought in is going towards positive upgrades. So maybe, you know, it is a bit of a tourist attraction. I can see it from the videos that you shoot. But hopefully there's also some solid scientific research being done. And we're going to talk a little bit about that today. You know, one of the things that I found fascinating in one of your videos, one of your articles, Jock, was that back in 2016, the entire area was scanned with a LIDAR attached to a satellite. And LIDAR is really opening our perspectives to archaeological ruins. Here in the Americas, LIDAR has really opened our eyes to the Mayan civilization. We see scans in Guatemala, and we see them in northern Mexico. But the scan that I saw in this article was quite revealing, and I want you to talk a little bit about it, specifically the different pyramids. Now, when I saw the scan of the Pyramid of the Sun, it was without a doubt an artificial northern-facing platform. I mean, it was perfectly shaped like a pyramidal side. And I was just shocked. Talk a little bit about that scan and what the revelations are.
Well, the first, let me just mention that when you do a LIDAR scan, there are many levels of data to the scans. Mm-hmm. And the foundation hasn't had the money to actually purchase all the levels of data. They don't have the money. So it's kind of sad. We have some images, and it's like, well, that's as much as we can afford to buy. And so, you know, we have what you saw was the best we have so far, but there are other levels of data that could show us even more amazing things. The northern orientation of the Pyramid of the Sun is the best orientation of any pyramid that's been documented. I mean, it's 12 times more accurate than the northern orientation of the Great Pyramid in Egypt, which is shocking, you know, because the Great Pyramid has a very good northern orientation. We're talking about cosmic north now. So on the scan, you can see the smoothness of the artificial structures. Temple of Mother Earth is like a satellite dish. It's a curving pyramid. It's a long pyramidal shape that curves and that's pointing north. It's like a satellite dish that's pointing north. And you're like, well, what is it pushing energy toward if it's doing that? And so both the Pyramid of the Sun and the Temple of Mother Earth have this northward facing orientation in this really smooth LIDAR scan. You can see the image being super smooth. And you're like, well, I wonder if that's the key. Because, you know, Valery Uvarov said that, I don't want to get into UFOs necessarily, but he said that there might be a mothership above the North Pole that's receiving transmissions from the northern sides of pyramids. And I thought, well, if that's the case, then this could be a clue that that's what this might have been built for, at least one reason, you know?
Yeah, Uvarov's all into pyramids, of course, in Russia. So he would be – that's funny that he would say something about UFOs, though. So he's really crossing the lines. What else did we learn about these scans? Jock, I guess you're telling me that they haven't been analyzed with any great depth, but – has anyone from the scientific community had a chance to drill down into some of the research that came out of those scans?
In fact, Semir did drilling before in the very beginning of the project in 2006, 2007. And what he found was layers of what he calls sandstone blocks. He's the man, but I call him claystone because when I see him, they disintegrate into clay. If you put your finger on them and you press on them, eventually you're going to get a little bit of clay. Now there is some fine sand in there, you know, but I call him claystone. But anyway, so he finds the layers. He went on what he calls the access ramp to the Pyramid of the Sun, and he drilled down. And he see, you know, there's the layers of blocks, and then there's layers of clay, you know, softer clay, then layers of these sandstone or claystone blocks. So he's always finding the construction layers when he drills down, and then he'll find a hollow space, and then he'll find a concrete ceiling. When he was on Ratnitsa, he drilled in there, Ratnitsa Tumulus, which is the northernmost structure in the complex, and it's a conical shaped tumulus. So and we know that that's built because it has the, you know, the claystone and then the soft clay alternating layers. And in fact, that little tumulus has the biggest megaliths in it, and they're all inclined into the structure and spiraling up the structure in these layers. But he drilled down and he found after the sandstone or the claystone layer, then the claystone, then he found a concrete ceiling to a big open space. And then a concrete floor. And it's like, wow, you know, this is big news. But of course, the mainstream media suppresses all the alternative archaeology stuff and the alternative anthropology and the alternative, you just fill in the blank. They just keep suppressing it. So nobody talks about this stuff.
How deep did he end up drilling? What was the total depth that he drilled?
Vratnitsa, I think, was 70 feet. And the access ramp in the Pyramid of the Sun, I'm not sure how far he went. I don't know. Well, I don't think it was 70 feet, but I can't remember what that was.
Okay. Let's.
To be the companion of all knowledge.
It's tough. It's tough because there's so much we don't know. Here is my understanding for our listeners of these pyramids, the Bosnian pyramids. And you can correct me after I kind of give a little highlight. approximately 30,000 years ago, an advanced people discovered energy centers coming out of this mountain range and began to form it into an artificial pyramid. And they used artificial means to reshape the pyramid in the form of massive concrete slabs. Now, to support these slabs, they had to create retaining walls. They had to shape the structure so that it conformed to a pyramidal shape. We don't understand pyramidal energy, but there's a number of people that believe that it was shaped that way so that it can be a receiver as well as an emitter of energy. It was used off and on for thousands of years, and then at some point it was not used anymore. They also created tunnels, and in these tunnels there are areas that are resonating energy that are for healing, so on and so forth. So that's about as far as I can take it. What else can you add to that, Jock?
Well, what I'm going to say is going to sound, crazy. I got to prepare you, Cliff. Okay. It's going to sound crazy even to you probably, okay? Right. I couldn't find anything that was natural when I was there. So, I've been up every single road in Visoko and anywhere near Visoko, and there are no natural structures that I could find. The hill that Kate Ka or KTK tunnel is in, it's right at the apex of where the Bosnia River and the Fojnica River meet in the center of Visoko. That hill where Kate Ka tunnel, that's another tunnel system there besides Rovne tunnel, is a built structure. Then Rovne tunnel is in a hill that's a built structure. In other words, they built the hills. Somebody built hills. And then maybe they left Rovne as an empty space, or maybe some other culture came in and dug it out. I don't know. But Kate Ka, or KTK tunnel, which is right across from the Pyramid of the Sun to the east, across the Fojnica River, you can see how the sides of the entrance come in at angles to each other, and then there's a flat ceiling. You see the clay layers, and you see that the entire hill is built, and you're like, well, they left it as an empty space. So if anybody wants to Google that article, just Google empty space Kate Ka, KTK. So then you go, well, The Rovne tunnel is a slightly different material for the sides of it and the roof. In Kate Ka, it's clay layers, purely clay layers, no concrete and no conglomerate. In Rovne tunnel labyrinth, which goes on for kilometer after kilometer, and they just keep excavating this fill-in material that was brought in 4,600 years ago to plug it. So as they excavate, they find more and more and more and more tunnels and just winding, endless branching tunnels. The roof and the sides are made from conglomerate, and you can pluck a pebble right out of the side or right out of the roof and it comes right off, but it'll stick there if you don't touch it, but it's kind of like this compressed conglomerate that looks like a flood, really chaotic little pebbles and sand that looks like and some sand drifts too. Some ceilings you'll see, like in megalith K5 or ceramic sculpture K5 chamber, you see that the part of the ceiling is made of a sand drift, and you're like, wow, the sand is the part of the ceiling? Well, isn't it going to come down? No, it just sticks up there. It's been compressed over thousands of years.
When you talk about conglomerates, are you talking about a glue with rocks and some sediment of some kind?
It's like flood brought river stones and sand, and it's crystallized over time under compression. That's what the theory is, at least. Now, I don't know if it was brought in and artificially compressed as part of the built hill. I don't know. It's such a mystery, Cliff. I'm telling you, that complex, as you said in the very, very beginning of this podcast, it's such a conundrum, such a mystery. We don't really have a whole lot of answers about any of this. It's really, really weird. And I don't want to sound crazy to your listeners, but this, I'm just telling you what I found,
Yeah. You haven't mentioned anything that sounds too out of there yet. I mean, UFOs or alien stuff hasn't come into your language yet. So I'm good. I'm good to go so far. Let's talk about some of the materials that were used to form the – I'm going to focus on the Pyramid of the Sun because that's the one I know the best. Years ago, well, not years ago, I'd say 2 years ago when we had Dr. Sam Osmanovich on the program, he began talking about the various layers of concrete, some for used for retaining walls, some used for walkways. These patches of concrete mystify not only him, but a lot of other people in the scientific community, because we're talking huge, multi-ton sections of concrete. Talk a little bit about what do they call a mega pascals, the tensile strength of the concrete that you discovered, as it compares to today's concrete, and why it's most likely, or it has to be, the real focal point of artificiality on this thing, on this pyramid.
Right. So basically a megapascal is the hardness of concrete is measured in megapascals. So the reason for that is that a megapascal is a unit of pressure. It's an atmospheric pressure unit. And so under a certain number of these atmospheric pressure units, or this under a certain amount of pressure, concrete will break. And so the normal hardness of concrete that we use for bridges and things like that in modern day is 60 megapascals. So that just gives you sort of a basic idea. 60 to 80 at the top.
60 is what we use today, 60, right?
Yeah, 60 to, and at the very top, it would be 80. I mean, there are concretes and certain structures that use higher than 80 megapascals of hardness, but okay. 60 to 80 is good. You know, that's real good for modern day. Well, the concrete on the Pyramid of the Sun tested between 70 and 133.8 megapascals. So the highest rating is so much farther superior, more superior as far as hardness and therefore as far as durability. Also, mm-hmm. You and your listeners might be interested in this too. And I don't know if Samir Osmanovich talked about this, but the water absorption rate is also something you can measure for a concrete. And if a concrete has a high water absorption rate, obviously it's going to be weaker because the water gets in the winter and freezes and then cracks it open. So the Pyramid of the Sun concrete has a 1.1 water absorption rate.
Okay.
I'm just going to check this for a second. Yeah, 1.1. And then the best water absorption rate of modern day concrete is 3%. So we have 1.1%, which is super good because it means we're not going to get the water coming in the winter and cracking it. And the best modern day concrete is 3% water absorption rate. So, I mean, it's crazy what they did.
So the builders had an advanced chemistry for concrete to build these slabs. Now, have you been able to find what the actual dimensions of one of these slabs was? I think some of them are so big and they're buried so deeply into the mountain, there's no way to know. But has there been any scans to determine what somewhat of an average would be, if there is such a thing as an average, given the size of this pyramid?
Well, we just happen to have that information right in front of me, so I can tell you exactly. For your listeners, this concrete on the Pyramid of the Sun, which is on a 44-degree slope angle and was likely poured there, although we can't confirm that, but it was likely poured on a slope angle. And it's kind of amazing, by the way, that the bottom part of the slab is not thicker than the top part, because how did they pour it at a slope angle and not have that like that and not have it slip down? But so that's a mystery. But anyway, as far as the size of the slabs, sometimes we have blocks, by the way, sometimes we have slabs, and it'll be, that's another mystery about the Pyramid of the Sun. So literally 25 meters to the right of one excavation site on the Pyramid of the Sun, there'll be a different kind of concrete. It'll be more of a rectangular blocky kind of thing. And then there's four layers there. But on the if you go 25 meters to the left, you've got a site where there's slabs and there's a one thick layer. And you stand next to one of these blocks and I'm 6'2", and I stand next to one of the bigger slabs and it goes up to my hip. It's basically half my body height is the thickness of a slab. So one of those slabs, I let's see, Semir has written this thing out about the cubic meters and the square meters. Okay, 18 square meters for one of these slabs is the size. And then, let's see, 14.5 cubic meters, and the thickness is 75 to 80 centimeters of this particular slab. So, but 18 square meters is the size of the of one of these, you know, larger slabs.
And what do they weigh? What are they weighing in at? It must be it's 50 tons or something.
32 tons for this particular, you know, rather.
32.
Yeah, 32 tons. So he's the scientist guy. He's got the scientific mind. I'm just reading what he wrote, you know.
Is the feeling that these cement blocks, these facing blocks, were aligned from the bottom to the top, or are they only in one portion of the Sun Pyramid?
When you say aligned, what do you mean by aligned?
Well, in other words, they start from the ground and they can go as high as the top of the. I mean, have you found the blocks at, all the way at the very top, or how are they distributed?
Aha, I see. Well, the first excavation site on the Pyramid of the Sun that we come to is actually below the concrete block area. And it's I don't know, 50 meters below that on the side of the pyramid. So it's the first excavation, which is about a third of the way up the Pyramid of the Sun, we find an inward leaning, you know, structure that's not concrete, but it's concrete like material in the sense that it's heated clay. That essentially the reason the concrete's so strong on the Pyramid of the Sun is that they used heated clay to get all these pebbles and sand together. Now, There's no pebbles and rocks in this first excavation site's material that we found. That's the structural material nearer to the base of the pyramid. It's just this sort of bizarre stepped, super strong, inward leaning, essentially right angled material that's massive. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. It's way, way, way bigger than 18 square meters. It's not like one slab and one slab. It's a huge section that we just unearthed from lots and lots of construction clay that had been covering it. Now, this construction clay, by the way, you should probably also know, is not formed naturally from time. It's all pure. There's no bones in it. There's no stones. It's all pure clay that they lay down in really thin layers above the concrete or above the concrete-like material to protect it, presumably from the elements, and also possibly as an energetic conductor, because the clay is it does have the crystalline material in it that is a good conductor for various energies.
Huh. So you're saying that the cement was covered by a layer of clay and to kind of preserve the integrity of the shape, or because you're guessing that it may have been a supportive conductor to whatever energies were being pulsed in and out of the thing.
Right. Well, the clay is definitely a part of the constructed pyramid, and it's on.
Oh.
So it's on top of the – it's not just below for earthquake mitigation, you know, and it's not just alternating all the way through the pyramid, you know, for earthquake mitigation. It's also on top as – presumably as a protection. We don't really know.
Mm-hmm. A lot of Egyptologists have a real problem with the Bosnian pyramids, including Hawass and a body of people from Egypt, simply because it's not – a typical pyramid in the sense of being built on four sides with stone blocks. Since he's come out, Hawass and some others, including Robert Schock, to say that this is a natural formation, a hell of a lot of research has been done. Has there been any breakaway from this standard pyramid thought into the idea of an artificially formed mountain that is a pyramid now? Is there a body of evidence or a body of scientists is saying, look, this is not a typical pyramid, but we need to stretch our concept of what pyramid is?
That's an interesting question. I know that I have seen, and I can't remember the name of the author of this, this research that says that it's a shaped mountain. I just can't remember who it was. But as far as the science that I have seen, as opposed to that claim, the science shows us that it's built as far down as we can go. You know, we haven't seen evidence of a natural structure on top of which some other stuff has been layered. In other words, so I don't see the evidence of that yet. It doesn't mean it's not the case, though.
Okay, so let's just go back to my original description. Do you concur and agree that the original builders chose that location because it sits on top of a ley line or a telluric field that is pulsing up massive, massive amounts of energy, which is somehow captured, and then these advanced beings who built this structure, realizing that it had a natural flow, formed this mountain into a artificial pyramid to capture and perhaps increase the energy flow?
This makes scientific sense, and as far as my own particular knowledge goes and my own research, the only research that I've done, I mean, I haven't done any ley line research except to receive emails from people who keep telling me that this site is on a ley line. So they're telling me this. I don't know if they're correct, but it sounds like more and more people are saying the same thing. And so that's all I know about that.
Okay, cool. You were very outspoken in a number of articles and critical of Dr. Robert Schock's assessment, which basically, in his words, he believes that the pyramid complex is totally natural and it's not really a pyramid. I can see why you were very outspoken and reacted the way you did, but what was the balance in the bottom line to your disagreement with his assessment as a geologist now?
Well, the entire chronology of the traditional or orthodoxical attack on the pyramids, including Robert Schock's attack, even though he's not particularly an orthodoxy guy, because he is alternative. He's got an alternative, dating for the Sphinx and things like that. But the entire chronology of events is in my article, The Mysterious Anti-Scientific Agenda of Robert Schock at the Bosnian Pyramid Complex. Now, I want to preface this, Cliff, by saying that a lot of people have told me that Robert's a great guy, and I would sit there and have a beer with him. I mean, I don't drink beer, but I'd have a kombucha or a smoothie with him. I don't have anything against Robert Schock, because I don't think that science should be a battle of personalities. I think it should just be about the evidence. I'm just defending science in this article. That's all I'm doing. So I just want to make that clear. Now, as far as your question goes, the geology of the site was already laid out before Robert actually visited it in 2006. So there was a geologist who made a really, really detailed report about the possible tectonic uplift that might have naturally created these structures. And the report says categorically that it would be impossible for that to happen because the uplift areas, the uplift lines that are already – the stress lines that already exist there do not conform to the pyramid lines. In other words, the lines of the pyramids do not match the stress – the possible uplifting lines. And he's got it all detailed. He's got it all – he's got images. And so that's in that article. So if anyone wants to see that report, which Robert did not engage – I mean, he didn't even say that it exists – So if he had engaged that article, that would have made me really happy because that's a scientific thing. If he had a different opinion about it, great, engage the article, tell us why it's wrong. He didn't do that. So I was like, if you don't engage the geology behind a site that's already been reported by a scientist, then are you acting scientifically? And so that was my main argument, is that we need to follow the science of the project.
Okay. I mean, this whole area is so out of our understanding in terms of typical pyramids. I think that's where the problem is. This is an artificially formed mountain into a pyramid, and it just throws the pyramid culture book out the window. What if you were to put it into in your own words, being there as much as you have, what do you believe that the complex was used for? You think it's a similar kind of a complex that the Maya had, where they had a civic center with a pyramid and then some surrounding buildings, each emitting its own frequency? Or what is your feeling on this complex?
Well, I'm going to have to go to the foundation of the whole site, and that's the riverbed. There's an article called Megastructure, the Fojnica Riverbed Winding Through the Bosnian Pyramid Complex is an Ancient Artificial Megalithic Structure. So if anyone wants to find that, that tells the story of the structural foundation of the whole site. So all of the structures are tied to each other through the riverbed. So the Pyramid of the Sun begins in the middle of the Fojnica River. The Pyramid of the Moon begins in the middle of the Fojnica River. Osceola Hill begins there. So, you know, that's the key. Once you see that the whole thing is a megastructure, then you go, wait a minute, what is this? I mean, it's, in other words, to answer your question, I don't have any idea why someone would build something that was so large that seems to be its own sort of entity. And how deep does it go? In other words, is it just sitting on the earth, or did they build it deeper and deeper and deeper? Now, we know, by the way, speaking of scans, Klaus Dohna had two satellite scans done of the Pyramid of the Sun. And he did that in 2011 and 2014. So we have GPR, ground penetrating radar satellite scans done. And he shows us that there is a tunnel system at various depths down to several hundred feet, winding around the Bosnian Pyramid of the Sun and all the way over to Ravne Tunnel. So this is super exciting.
Yeah, let's talk about these tunnels. And thank you for reminding me about Klaus Dohna's scan, because he also did the scan in the Giza Plateau and found that labyrinth that was reported by the Greeks. And we're still waiting to hear from Carmen Bolter, Dr. Bolter, on what exactly the details of those scans has revealed. But talk a little bit about the Rodney Tunnel labyrinth, what you have discovered, what's unique about it, and what's going on there.
Well, there is, again, the my entire sort of knowledge is in my articles and videos. The key article for people to see that's a sort of a new perspective on the tunnels there is called Ravne Tunnel Labyrinth, a prehistoric tunnel dug out of a hill built in its entirety in ancient times. In other words, as I mentioned earlier, the hill is built out of alternating clay stone and soft clay layers. The soft clay was presumably for earthquake mitigation. And then the claystone layers are for the structure, keeping them. Some of those claystone layers are huge. I mean, they're probably about a foot and a half thick, and they extend for meters, you know, so they're huge structural blocks leaning into the hill. So they're always leaning in, all these claystone layers throughout the complex always lean into the structure very quite steeply for structural strength. So that being said, that hill that Ravne is in is a super strong, super built artificial hill. And once you know that, you go, well, wait, they built the hill? How deep does the hill go? Well, the hill's way, the entrance to Ravne Tunnel is way, way, way above the riverbed. In other words, it would meet near the top of the Pyramid of the Sun. If you went all the way, if you just went level straight across 2.5 kilometers southeast to the Pyramid of the Sun, you would hit the Pyramid of the Sun, you know, near its access ramp, which is really close to the top. And that's a tall pyramid.
Are these is this labyrinth within this Pyramid of the Sun, or is it somewhere nearby?
It's nearby. So a lot of people who popularize this stuff without really researching it say that Ravne is in the Pyramid of the Sun, but it's not.
Yeah, it's confusing.
It is.
I'm glad you clarify that.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't want anyone to be confused about this, because it's actually the entrance to Ravne Tunnel is 2.5 kilometers northwest of the Pyramid of the Sun. But the labyrinth goes toward the Pyramid of the Sun. And so Semir's main goal has always been very clearly to keep excavating this fill-in material, this loose stuff, the sand and gravel, until we finally find the one tunnel out of this huge labyrinth that does go to the access ramp that then would follow all the way along to the Pyramid of the Sun.
Okay, does Klaus Dohna's satellite scan pierce into this labyrinth so that you kind of have an idea of where you're going, or did it not pierce enough?
Oh, yeah. I'll say yeah, but actually what I mean is no. Sorry about that. It pierces down to show us where the tunnels are, but when we're in labyrinth, the Rodney Tunnel Labyrinth, the data is not clear enough for us to actually find where these tunnels are that the scans give us. Mm-hmm. So there's an abyss between this incredible satellite scan data and our ability to physically in real time find those tunnels. Now, uh-huh. A woman named Sue Jones, this is key information for people who want to know about Ravne. Sue Jones, she's an osteoarchaeologist and she's done lots of different scientific things in her life. She came and she went into Ravne and made a long video with Sue Jones, in Ravne Tunnel. And she said that there are going to be at least three levels of Ravne Tunnel. So the level we're on now is the top level, she said. And then she said that we're not going to get to the Pyramid of the Sun through the top level labyrinth. We can only find the one tunnel, the one passageway to the Pyramid of the Sun through the second level. And we're not going to be able to vertically get to the second level. We're not, because there is no vertical passage to it. She said you have to go in from the side. You have to find the next tunnel entrance to the second level, which would be maybe 20 meters below it. So okay. So Samir has found other tunnels nearby that he thinks might be the second level. He's not sure. And he calls those Ravne 2. He calls them Ravne 3. And now he just found this last week, they found another tunnel system, which he calls the healing tunnels, because that's the fourth tunnel system, at the same level as Ravne Tunnel Labyrinth. So it's really close. It's only probably less than 100 meters away.
So were these living quarters for people? Were they ceremonial center? What do we think were these tunnels used for?
It's such a mystery. The very first article I wrote in 2011 was called "The Mysterious," and it's about Ravne Tunnel. I mean, it's mm-hmm. basically what we have is mysteries. We have these what we called megaliths when we first excavated and found these odd sculptures, ceramic sculptures.
Yeah.
And so now we call them ceramic sculptures, but they're still called megaliths. But if people want to find them on the internet, they can just search egg-shaped monolith or egg-shaped megalith. They can search K2, K1, K2, K3, K4, K5 megalith.
Yeah.
Rodney.
Yeah.
Now these things are made of artificial ceramic. They also did a scan of megalith K2, and they found that there's an oval-shaped space inside the ceramic megalith, which is quite a large megalith. It's longer than a person is, and it's about, I don't know, a foot and a half deep, thick, and it's a textured megalith, ceramic, brown, clay is the binder. Inside there's an oval space, what they determined is it's not metal, it's not wood, it's not an organic material of any kind, it's not a space of air. They believe it's a crystal. So they believe that it's some kind of quartz crystal inside the megalith. Really interesting. Also, the megaliths are all situated on river meeting points. In other words, there's underground water channels that meet or diverge directly underneath all these megaliths. And what Samir believes is that the megaliths were placed there to mitigate the really, really dangerous energy. It's dangerous to our health of these underground water channels. And so they're essentially there for health reasons. And so it could be a health complex, and that's what it's being used for now. Not necessarily officially, because I don't know if you can claim, you can make health claims, but the science is telling us that people who go into Ravne Tunnel have their blood sugar, which is, if their blood sugar is too high, it lowers to closer to normal, which is unheard of. And I mean, it does this in an hour. You go in for 45 minutes or an hour and your blood sugar returns to really close to normal. People with pains, shoulder pains, back pains, they come out. There's all these miraculous testimonials, which can't really be used to make any health claims officially, but the testimonials exist, and there's lots of science that has been done on aura fields before and after, really, really, really specific, detailed science using the computers to measure aura fields and blood cells and sugar in the blood, and then before and after. So there's tons and tons of science around it. So it's clearly a healing complex now. Was it a healing complex for them? We don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's just strange that they would build these this labyrinth of tunnels that just are endless without some kind of a purpose. And I have seen the videos that you've shot and other people have shot of these megaliths that are buried in different parts. And there's just no way to know what the hell they were. But I want to talk a little bit about the emanation and the resonance. Dr. Konstan Korakoff, who is a physicist, did some readings there and believes that the pyramid is giving off some strange emissions. Do we know anything about these? They might be just too advanced for us to figure out, and we know this is a problem when we visit other pyramid complexes that are giving off emissions. But do we have any idea what the emissions are at the Bosnian pyramids?
And you're talking about his PIP camera, the poly contrast interference camera. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So this is an amazing thing. I don't know if your listeners have, or if you, Cliff, have. I'm sure you've heard about this Carillion photography.
Carillion. Sure, it's been around for decades.
Yeah. So it's like that. It's very like that. It's measuring something that we don't normally see, basically. So the PIP camera. And I'm just going to search it on really quick in this document so I make sure I get this correct. Yeah, polycontrast interference photography. They also have a polycontrast interference videography, and there's a video of the Pyramid of the Sun that is using the polycontrast interference videography to show in real time the pushing upward of the energetic lines that are normally horizontal. And when it comes to the Pyramid of the Sun, these lines go horizontal. And you're like, whoa, what does that mean? We don't know what it means. We know that something weird is happening with the energetic layers. You have the different energetic layers that are different colors in this polycontrast interference videography and in the photography. So you can see how the pyramids are affecting it. So the natural non-pyramidal shapes are not, or the rolling hills, let's say. I don't necessarily call them natural because they're built, but the pyramidal shape is the key to forcing the energy upward. And you're like, well, why are they doing that?
Yeah, it's funny that the group of engineers and sound specialists are the ones who are really breaking this question, I should say, bringing it up more and more and more. And it's kind of an interdisciplinary group of scientists that are saying there's something here. There is really something here. It's just that it's such a strange place, you know, and it's so damn old. Do we have any recent carbon dating on any of the artifacts that are found? Has anyone found a skeleton yet of burial of anyone locally?
We haven't found any bones in Rovne Tunnel Labyrinth, for instance. So we haven't found any bones in the digging of the on any site in the pyramid complex on the pyramids or the tumuli. The carbon dating for the Pyramid of the Sun right now is at 34,000 years old. They found a fossilized leaf between two concrete blocks that they dug down enough to get between these blocks, and there was a fossilized leaf. And so we have that, you know, anyone can find that on the internet, or they can just write me and I send it to them. And so we have the data from that leaf. Now people say, well, carbon dating is suspect because the cosmic rays change over time. And so you never know for sure if the carbon dating is correct.
A big issue. Yeah. That's right. A big issue. It
totally is. I'm just thinking that, you know, I'm just a lay person, but these concrete blocks between which the leaf was found were also covered by more than a meter of construction clay. So hopefully that would protect it from the cosmic ray changes, you know. But like you say, it's still a controversial subject for sure.
Yeah. Well, it's one that I can kind of grasp onto because I'm very much into the Mayan pyramid complexes, the Mayan culture, pyramid culture. And so I have a sense of why they are built the way they are. I want to bring up and have you talk real shortly. We're getting down to our end here about these artificially textured stones. You did a fascinating video and it looks like, first of all, it's an unusual composite, but it looks like they've troweled or used tools to move and push these concrete-like forms into very unusual shapes. What was your conclusion as to how these were textured and why, and if they were part of a wall or part of a section of this pyramid?
All right, let me preface my answer, Cliff, by saying that your listeners may be interested to know that the etymology of clay, the word clay, is glue. So in the past, the word glay, G-L-E-Y, was the most ancient word in Proto-Indo-European language for glue. And we took that word and that concept, glue or glay, and we call it clay today, and we think of it as dirt. But the ancients thought of clay as glue, and they used it to make their pyramids, and they used it to make all sorts of amazing structures on the planet, besides pyramids, tumuli and other things. So these textured stones on the Pyramid of the Sun, which are construction stones that are in long terraces that are inclined into the structure for structural strength, all these textured stones laid next to each other and also with soft earthquake mitigating clay on their left and their right, as well as on top and below them, were oddly not just glued to themselves, but as you said, textured on the top. And you're like, why would they texture them? Well, why are the bottoms always flat? Why aren't the bottoms textured? Why is it only the top? And you say, well, maybe not you, but one might say, oh, we want them to be beautiful on top. Well, they're covered with construction clay. There's no way anyone will ever see these things in the universe unless you get a bunch of crazy people and volunteers to start digging up pyramids or what look like hills. And that's what we did. We dug up through this construction clay, and we found these beautifully textured stone terraces full of these beautiful stones, different sizes, really small, really large, medium-sized, with weird texturing, what I call texturing or deep gouging, depending on the stones. And then, as you mentioned, on the one stone, if people want to just check out the Bosnian Rosetta Stones, that's another article that shows the tool marks. It looks like a spatula tool mark, two or three places on this one stone. And to me, that's the key to realizing that this is for sure, without any doubt whatsoever, a worked stone.
Yeah, it's quite unique. And I was fascinated to see how it was formed. It looks like it was formed before it was dried. And it's quite fun to look at. Hey, we're at the end of our time. It's been fascinating. You're passionate about the Bosnian pyramids. What would be your most fascinating discovery about the pyramids? Of course, there's the tunnels and there's the labyrinths, so forth and so on. But what do you find is the most unique aspect of this anomalous structure?
Without a doubt, it's the riverbed tying everything together, because no one's ever found a built river before. And the fact that the riverbed is built and the recent flood several years ago in Bosnia took out the sides of the banks of some of the Fojnica River, which is normally a super placid river that runs through the complex. And so you can see how the layers of the river keep going, and then the claystone layers, which are hard-baked, adhered claystone layers in the river. In other words, there's no soft clay layers between the hard baked claystone layers. There's no earthquake mitigating stuff there because the soft stuff would just get washed out by the water. So it's adhered baked clay layers in the riverbed, but then it switches to earthquake mitigating soft clay. Then there's a layer of the big claystones again, and that becomes the Pyramid of the Sun, and that becomes the Pyramid of the Moon and Osceola Hill. And you're like, well, wow, it's one structure, and the water that's coming through the river is not just rainwater, but it's spring water. So the only way that water's coming through the river, well, there's two ways, from the rain, but also from a spring near the Bosnian Pyramid of the Moon that's coming up. But other than that, you can't get below the complex. It's one structure. So it's this shocking megalithic megastructure. It's just mind-blowing.
It's fantastic. All right, give people your website and your YouTube channel information so they have it. I will post this on the Facebook page, which will also go on earthancients.com for you, those of you listening. Go ahead.
Well, if people want to check out articles, it's An American in Bosnia, and there are two blogs. One's a Google blog, you know, Blogspot. And then the other one's WordPress. The newer one is WordPress. So An American in Bosnia. And then it's YouTube / Bosnian Pyramids. And there's lots of other YouTube channels for this. And the other official, mine's really a backup official site for the Foundation, Archaeological Park Foundation. But the official one is Bosnian Pyramids TV. And that has a lot of Bosnian videos.
And that's the stuff that you shot for Dr. Sam.
Yeah, the stuff I shot is all on Bosnian Pyramids.
Oh, that their main website. All right, fantastic. Jock Doubleday, it's been a pleasure. When are you going back? Are you going to be going back soon? We're going to have you on the program again.
Oh, I'd love to come on and share this with your listeners. I'm so, as you can tell, I'm so enthusiastic about it. I talk to people all day about it. But I'll probably go back and make a video floating down the river to show people using a drone following the boats. I want to make a video about that and just show them the layering from the riverbed up to show them the megastructure. That's the next thing I want to do.
Fantastic. Hey, we'll have to get you back on the program. It was real fun, and our time's up. Jock Doubleday, a real pleasure. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much, Cliff.
Okay, that was fun. That was always enlightening to hear another perspective from the Bosnian pyramids. We still don't know the function of these pyramids. We don't know what these individuals found, why they decided to reface, remold, restructure these hills into pyramid shapes. And we just don't have the technology to understand this. The reasons and to decipher the energetics, the emissions, as I call them, that come out of this pyramid. And one day we will. One day we will learn. We will decipher. We will decipher what is inside these pyramids and what they were for. So that was fun today. Okay, that's it for today's program. Remember, your support in the form of a subscription to Earth Ancients is what keeps us going. Go to Patreon, patreon.com/Earth Ancients, and become a subscriber. Okay, we will talk to you next week. Have a great holiday.